Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Alazric Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Gonna be a good show today. The boys are already arguing. Not about baseball, but about movies. And yeah, we're going to talk baseball. Probably get some movie talking here, too. Welcome to the show. It is the 20th of December. Happy holidays, guys. This will be our last show before Christmas, and then I think the entire office is off next week, except not all of us, but...
I'll be here.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Oh, I'm out for like 10 days.
Yeah, Scott, how about you?
I'm gone, too. Heath and I are non-essential personnel.
Must be nice.
10-day
wow.
This is...
Imagine actually getting time off. Must be nice, fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It really is. It's going to be very nice. I am out from... Jeez, the 25th until January 3rd?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how long we're closed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not like that. That's the whole week of, yeah, whatever. That's not that big of a deal. Like,
no, I get the Monday and Tuesday after that as well. Okay. Although the Monday, I think we're closed as well.
Yeah, yeah. Monday is.
You're taking one day off. Congratulations. Yeah.
That's the best part. I'm off for 10 days and I only have to take one day off.
That's a great thing. So we won't have a show next week. We will have a show the following week and we'll wish a Happy New Year at the time. We are
going to
talk about, so we've done three drafts fairly recently. We just did the 10-teamer on the air last week. The results are up on the website if you want to hear the rest of it. I think we did 12 rounds on the air. We did head-to-head points, roto, and that 10-team league. So what I asked Scott, Heath, and Chris, give me two overdrafted players, players who went too early, and two underdrafted players, players who went too late and are great values that we've seen so far. And we're going to talk about Christian Yelich, Rick Porcello, Michael Brantley, Lance McCullers, Garrett Cole, Kyle Schwarber, Adam Jones, among others. But I want to start with an email of the day. It's from Joe Pig from Alabama. Okay. Hey, Joe Pig. Dear Home Alone, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and Die Hard.
Probably his three favorite Christmas movies.
Three movies that aren't Christmas movies.
All three of them are? See?
Chris, you're the worst.
I mean, I don't count Die Hard myself, but whatever. If he wants to count it.
I think Chris's point is a very valid one. Either all of them are or all of them are not.
Right.
You can decide that's for yourself.
Not true at all. Just not true. Home Alone and Christmas Vacation are perfect examples of why Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
Agree to disagree.
What do you think? You think none of them are Christmas movies, Chris? Or all of them?
I think our dependence on rigidly defined genres limits our ability to
understand. Oh my, get this guy out of here. All right, here's the question. Just a general question for upcoming drafts next year. In those last five rounds of standard drafts, who's the one guy that you want to own a lot of?
Last five rounds.
The way our drafts are going, I don't know if this guy will be there in the last five rounds of every draft, but I feel like Vince Velasquez could be. And that's someone that I think late in drafts I'll have a ton of.
I'll go with his teammate, also Aaron Nola, who seems to not get drafted anytime early at all. And this guy's going to turn into my guy, so I'll say it since I'm going to get made fun of for it all year, is Travis Shaw.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that is going to be your guy. I mean, the way these drafts are going, Dustin Pedroia is a late rounder I'm going to have a lot of. But that's probably
a boring answer.
For. Yeah. Yeah, nobody's really jumped out to me in the late rounds yet. I'm always surprised how nobody seems enthusiastic about drafting Hunter Renfro, so maybe that'll be my choice. And Jim Johnson, I think, is kind of overlooked as a closer, so I'll say him too.
And I'm going Julio Urias. I'm a big Julio Urias guy.
Me too.
Yeah.
He's not going to be there late, though. He's
oh,
going before Pedroia.
When did he go?
You bet Urias.
Round 14 in the head-to-head. In the roto, round 17. And in the 10-team
league,
round 15.
Honestly, any number of young pitchers I would look at.
There are so many.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah. Like, Joe Musgrove, Jose Barrios, Lucas Giolito, any of those guys has, you know, I would say one of those guys, Theron Urias, Theron Vincent Velasquez, one of those guys has a stud season coming up.
I have Urias and Blake Snell probably about 30 spots apart in my rankings. Mm-hmm. And there's no good reason why they should be 30 places apart in my rankings. It's just that there's that many alike pitchers.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, when you're weighing both upside and downside, not all of them have as much upside as those two.
You mean 30 spots much less downside. At pitcher or 30 spots overall?
At starting pitcher.
Okay.
Yeah. At, yeah. It's,
yeah, that sounds about right.
After the top 30, 35 starting pitcher, it's just a big, it's just an entire matter of preference. Who do you like the most? Take them. And hope you guessed right.
Cool. So we got an email last week asking us about StatCast, and Chris says, no, you can't talk about StatCast if I'm not going to be on the podcast.
And I didn't say you couldn't talk about it.
You yelled at me via email.
I didn't say you couldn't talk about it. You can talk about whatever you want.
Well, I was saved
it was. It was, no, it was typical Chris. Of course you're doing StatCast on the podcast I'm not on. Like, he would never say you can't do it. He just...
Exactly.
Oh, you guys are doing a... I'd like to be on a baseball podcast.
I'm going to make a great grandmother.
Very passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here we are, Chris. Here's your chance to talk about StatCast and how it helps you in fantasy baseball.
I don't really have much to say.
Okay, great. Let's move on. News and notes.
No, I think... Look, we're still trying to figure out what it all means. There are some, you know, weird outcomes when you look at the StatCast leaderboards, but a lot of the stuff with the exit velocity, and specifically there's been a lot of work done on launch angle, and I guess Baseball Savant defines it as barreled balls, which are balls hit in a specific range of velocity and angle that tend to... They have an estimated batting average of above 500 and an estimated slugging percentage of above 1,500. So these are balls that tend to do a lot of damage. And I think there's a lot there because it tells us not just the velocity of the contact, but where you hit it. If you hit a 115-mile-an-hour ball, you know, down, it's probably going to be an out. If you hit a, you know, an 80-mile-an-hour ball in the right direction, this is all fairly... obvious stuff, but now we can kind of quantify the obvious things that we know about baseball.
The question that I have,
mm-hmm.
two questions. First,
now you only got one.
Okay, well, now I have two.
Okay,
one would be if Chris can do impressions, because
okay.
last year on Dave's podcast or on the football podcast, Dave had this thing he would do whenever he started talking about the difference between standard and PPR leagues.
Uh huh.
Where he would do super geek voice. And I think when you do the stat, you should do a StatCast segment and you have to use that voice though.
Isn't my normal voice super geek voice?
Nah, you could go a little farther. The second thing
is. Well, I would just say me speaking.
I love diving into this information. I think the biggest question we have so far is if this hitter has this type of hard contact rate for this period of time, does that make it more likely that he will over the next period of time? Like, we aren't really great at the predictive nature of it.
We're still figuring out, you know, I think the part of the problem with that is you would need a lot more than two seasons of data to know when numbers stabilize.
Right.
And so we're still trying to figure that out. And so you have stuff like barreled balls per plate appearance. Gary Sanchez was third in baseball at 10.5%. That seems like a really good thing. But Mark Trumbo was number 7. Ryan Howard was number 9. So I'm not 100% sure how much that tells us yet. Unless it also tells us that maybe Byung-ho Park's someone who might have more of a future than we think.
It tells us that Gary Sanchez was hitting the ball really hard.
Yes.
Yeah.
We kind of knew that.
Yeah,
we kind of knew that. The other question I have about analytics, guys, is like...
Adam is speaking exactly like he normally does right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You just changed the settings on the...
Right. Back to the factory default. What about spin rate? Spin rate, is that considered part of StatCast?
I'm not sure if that's StatCast or pitch effects, but that's definitely something that we're starting to see a lot more made use of. And I think there's a lot there. Yeah. You know, there you'll hear actual pitchers, major league pitchers, talk about their spin rate. And so I think that's something that we can definitely, you know, we're starting to see more analysis of that. We're starting to see more of that being used. And, you know, that these are all, what I like about all these numbers is it's just putting, we're figuring out ways to put numbers to the things that we already understand or think we understand.
Okay. This segment brought to you by Towers Pocket Protectors. Get yourself a pocket protector today. Use our offer code FFT. Not funny? Not funny. Not that
good. I think it should be FBT.
Yeah. Like, oh, shucks.
Come on.
You almost had to bleep yourself.
Yeah. All right. I made up for it by almost cursing. So, last thing on the StatCast thing. Baseball Savant's a very cool website. Don't you think it's a little bit of a pretentious name? Like, come on. Don't give yourself too much credit here.
You know, you got to go with what web domain names are available.
BaseballSuperGeniusItoldYouSo.com.
I mean, it's not like Fangraphs is the most descriptive name of all time either. It's just, you know.
Yeah, we've just built some graphs.
We're just used to it.
We're fans.
We're used to it.
Fans that built graphs.
Okay.
Why are we taking shots?
No, I just, I like Baseball Savant. I go there. I just think it's kind of funny. So, news and notes. Marlins, they signed Brad Ziegler and Junichi Tozawa to two-year deals to bolster their bullpen. Is Brad Ziegler, who all of a sudden started striking everybody out with the Red Sox, is he a threat to A.J. Ramos, Scott White?
Well, I don't think immediately. And I think I have enough confidence in Ramos that I'm not really worried about a change happening. But he has had control issues in the past. They were especially bad last year. So it's not outside the realm of possibility. But then again, I don't know that Ziegler is so enticing himself that it's somebody I'm going to handcuff to Ramos in a lonely league either.
That's when you make the move once it happens.
Okay. Yeah, he's kind of a high whip guy, Brad Ziegler. So is Ramos for that matter. And he never struck anybody out until going to Boston. He struck out a batter per inning. And we've got the Pirates signing Daniel Hudson to a two-year deal. Is he a threat to Tony Watson?
I can't imagine after the year. I don't know why he got 2 years, $11 million after the year he just had. That was surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
And no, okay. I don't think Tony Watson's role is the safest, but if Daniel Hudson's the Pirates' second best reliever next year, they have bigger problems.
And here we go. I'm going to be bold. I think Clay Buchholz is going to be fantasy relevant, worth owning for the Philadelphia Phillies.
At the very least, he's going to be a streamable starter, dependent on matchup. But I think he could be even, no, maybe it's, you shouldn't say that's the very least because he could just be awful and get cut, but I think he's going to be pretty decent. He gets to go to the NL East.
Yeah, I've always been a Buchholz guy.
I never really have, but yeah, I think he'll be fan. Somebody will use him and start him.
Is there any point? Is there any reason to express any amount of certainty in any possible outcome with Clay Buchholz?
No, there's no reason.
Is there a less consistent pitcher in Major League history?
No, there's one certain outcome. He's going to be on the DL at some point. That's about it.
Probably fair.
Mark the tape.
But if you look at what he did at the end of the season, he pitched pretty well. And he had, I think he had his last eight starts, two of them were terrible. Six of them were six or more innings and two or fewer earned runs. So six very good starts out of eight. And yeah, I mean, I can't ignore the bad, but it's also you can't ignore the good. Sometimes he's really good. And he will make $13.5 million for the Phillies this season.
I think what Chris and I were talking about earlier, like when you're having to put Blake Snell 80th in your starting pitcher rankings, like, Clay Buchholz just isn't going to register, you know?
Right, but if he does well at the start of the year, like even if he does well in his first start, I will probably pick him up.
He probably is going to do well early in the year, and he if he sticks around long enough, he'll probably do well late in the year because those schedules are generally front-loaded with division games and back-loaded with division games. And one of the reasons the NL East is bad offensively is the biggest reason is the Phillies. But there's only one team in that whole division that was in the top half of baseball in WOBA, and that was the Nationals, and they weren't even in the top 10.
I don't know how you could say he's probably going to be good, though. I mean, as awful
it's as Clay Buchholz. I don't think you can say he's probably going to be bad either. It's Clay Buchholz.
The early season schedule will probably help his chances of being something if he's going to be anything. But it's such a long shot to me.
Okay. He'll be a week two start pitcher. Can't wait to talk about him. Overdrafted and underdrafted. So let's start with the guys who went too early, according to our analysts. And then we'll get to the ones who went too late. You can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Actually, already getting a ton of baseball emails. That's exciting. We'll read some at the end of the show. Scott gave us two names that were overdrafted, Christian Yelich and Kyle Schwarber. Here's where Yelich went in the three leagues we did. He went in the ninth round in the head-to-head points league, three outfielder league. He went in the fifth round in the Roto five outfielder league. Both of those were 12 teams. And in the 10-team league, Yelich went in the sixth round. So in the Roto League and in the 10-team league, he basically went in the same spot. Fifth round in 12 teams, sixth round in the 10-team league, which was three outfielders. So, yeah, what do you think, Scott? When do you think is the appropriate time to take Christian Yelich, who was the number 10 outfielder in points last year and 15th in Roto?
I'm fine with the ninth round, the draft where he went there. I'm more objecting to the fifth, sixth round range. And I actually contrast it with, spoiler alert, one of my underdrafteds, Matt Kemp, because the two of them were so close in per game production last year. I actually feel like Yelich's numbers are the more worrisome of the two, though. He had a 21 homer season, more than double his previous career high. It was great. Everybody enjoyed it. The problem was his home run to fly ball ratio. All right, this is the complete list of players who had a better home run to fly ball ratio than Christian Yelich last year. Ryan Braun, Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, other Chris Davis, Yasmani Tomas, Mark Trumbo, Chris Carter, and then there was Christian Yelich. So it was like a who's who of home run leaders. All of those guys, I think, hit 30 or more. Most hit 40 or more. And then Christian Yelich is limping in with his 21. It's a pretty modest total for an elite home run to fly ball ratio. And if he depends on an elite home run to fly ball ratio just to get to 21, I think he could go right back to 10 or something like that and still be fine, still be plenty usable. But if he was only as good as Matt Kemp on a per game basis with 21, then, I mean, that's not fifth or sixth round material to me. That's not even top 20 material at the position.
I think top 20 seems very reasonable for Christian Yelich. I think you make really good points on the home run regression, but to suggest it's going to go all the way back to 10, I mean, he was a 24-year-old that just had his best power season in an environment that we think has changed baseball to where there's just more home runs everywhere now. I would say the over-under is 15 to 16 for Yelich on home runs, which will cause him to drop back just a little bit.
That is a fair over-under. I'm just saying there's enough risk of the under that I wouldn't want to pay up for the over.
So if you draft him as the 15th to 20th outfielder off the board, what's that, seventh round?
I mean, if you're drafting him as the 15th to 20th, that probably means you're passing up Mark Trumbo, you're passing up Adam Jones, you're passing up Ian Desmond, potentially.
I mean, I'm taking Jones usually in the ninth or the 10th round of these drafts, it seems like. So.
Okay, so that's where Christian Yelich is good. That's all I'm saying. I mean, yeah, if you think...
There's a better chance to me for 25-year-old Christian Yelich to be the same or improve on who he was than all these other 35-year-old guys.
He would. The thing is, he would have to improve. And this is actually, this is funny because Scott and I had a pretty pretty epic battle about Christian Yelich's power potential last offseason.
True.
And you ended up being right. He had the best power season of his career, and now you're on my side. Now you're seeing the light. Look,
yeah,
Christian Yelich actually isn't a bad power hitter in terms of home run to fly ball rate. He hits the ball very hard, and that's why he also has an extremely high BABIP. Would you say, Scott, 353 is his lowest for his career?
Something like that, the lowest.
That's he's a really high – he hits the ball. He makes good
contact. He doesn't hit fly balls.
No, that's the thing, is that last year was the career high in fly ball percentage with 20%. If he can inch that up again, maybe he can get close to 20, but yeah, relying on him to put a quarter of the fly balls he hits over the fence, it's just too much.
And I mean, I'm going to say, like last year's argument with you versus mm-hmm. this year's argument with you, where we're both on the same side, sounds like. I mean, perception is such a big part of this. Like, I can't analyze these guys in a vacuum. Yeah. It's what is the cost relative to what potentially could happen. I do think Yelich could hit another career high in home runs this year. He could approach 25. I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility. But if the price tag is fifth or sixth round, I think that's something somebody else can gamble on.
Okay.
And he did have 9 of his 21 home runs were graded out as just enough or lucky, according to Hit Tracker Online.
Yeah, again, I think the home runs probably come down 5. He probably loses a fourth of his home runs.
Well, he also lost his steals last year, Yelich. Yeah, those were only 9 steals. He had been a 20 steal guy at one point, and he played a full season, 155 games.
But what's his floor? Top 25 outfielder? 30?
He's pretty safe. You know, I feel like Yelich is kind of bust proof. You're not going to get a terrible season from him.
Well, if he has a 2015 Yelich season again, where he stole 16 bases, hit 7 homers.
Well, he played 134-ish games.
Project them out to 150. It still comes out to maybe 9, 10 home runs.
But it was a fairly productive season in fantasy.
Good batting
Adam's
average.
Point. It's not like he was being benched around fantasy leagues. But it's just, you know, that's 5th or 6th round. I want more than just high floor. I want trusted ceiling.
Okay. So in 2014, for example, Yelich played, I think, over 140 games. 144.
144.
He played
at age 22.
He had 284 with 9 home runs and 21 steals, and he was the number 23 outfielder in points and number 27 in Roto. So, you know, he's been consistent at the very worst, top 30. But yeah, maybe
a
little high.
Yeah, if you're getting a 25-year-old that's like guaranteed top 25 outfielder.
It's not bad, but he was going ahead of Polanco. He was going ahead of Carlos Gonzalez when he went in the 5th round.
Right. The only, like, if you told me Carlos Gonzalez was playing all year next year on the Rockies, then that's stupid. If Carlos Gonzalez is getting traded, I'd much rather have Yelich.
Yeah, I don't know if I would. I think they're close, but
Saying guaranteed top 25. I mean, he's obviously been healthy to this point. Like, that's healthy. Yelich prior to 2016, his upside was top 25, I'd say. So, you know,
how can you say that for a guy that's been top 25 that's 25 years old?
I just told
you. That's just the best he can ever be.
No, it's not the best he could ever
be. His skill set can improve, but we're talking about things that weren't necessarily skill. Like, 24% home run to fly ball ratio is...
I understand, like, but the home runs can come down, and you're still guaranteed top 25 outfielder.
Sure, but if he hits 12 home runs instead of 21, that's a pretty big drop off.
Yeah, but okay.
And you're looking at a drop not just in his home runs, but in his batting average as well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He's hit 300 two years in a row. If Yelich is going to hit 300, and the lowest he's hit is like 285, if he's going to hit the ball, like you said, he hits the ball hard. He has a high BABIP. Oh, I can't believe I keep saying BABIP. There's some safety there to Yelich.
I think he has a high floor and a relatively low ceiling.
Okay, let's go to our next guy. Can't spend 10 minutes on every guy. Kyle Schwarber. Scott was on the crusade against Kyle Schwarber last year. He didn't get to see if he was right. So this year...
I'll count it.
2 games played and a torn ACL. This year, again, he thinks Schwarber has been overdrafted. He went in the 5th round in the head-to-head points 1 catcher league. The 7th round in the 2 catcher roto league, and the 4th round in the 10 team league. What is your beef here with Mr. Schwarber? When should he be drafted?
It's interesting you mentioned the catcher angle. I'll get to that in a second. But I first want to point out that when I initially made my rankings, like in October, playoffs were still going on, I had Schwarber pretty low. Then I saw the way the Cubs used him in the World Series, obviously, every game at where DH spot was available, keeping him in the lineup even against Andrew Miller, you know, it led me to believe he's a much more integral part of the lineup than I gave him credit for. So I moved him up about 20 spots to 32nd. In these 3 drafts, He was the 14th outfielder selected, the 22nd outfielder selected, and most recently the 9th outfielder selected in the fourth round, as you mentioned, Adam. And, you know, every time somebody drafts him, because, you know, all these drafts were the people from who aren't with CBS. They write for other sites. And so they may not be familiar with our eligibility rules. I would ask them, you know, he's not catcher eligible, right? And they'd be like, yeah, that's fine. And I don't know if that's just they're assuming he's going to gain catcher eligibility. 5 games is all it takes in season. So, you know, there's a very good chance it happens. But I think there's also a very good chance he never plays catcher again. I mean, this was a pretty dreadful knee injury, and it's not like he was a good fit behind the plate to begin with. So if and of course, obviously now they have another young catcher in Wilson Contreras, who they're going to want to get at bats for behind the plate. Left field is still a possibility for Schwarber, but I keep hearing that they like a platoon of John Jay and Albert Almora in center.
So,
and
Scott,
of course, you have Jason Hayward in right.
If he became catcher eligible fairly early, within the first month of the season, would you be okay with Schwarber going around the fifth round?
Yeah, if you could guarantee me that, I would.
Okay.
But I think that's a big stretch at this point. And maybe spring training will offer some answers. I mean, if he catches at all in spring training, that's going to make me feel a lot better. But just based on the information I have now, like I said, he's my 32nd outfielder. That means he would be going even after Yelich in the 9th, 10th, 11th round range. And
moving him back to catcher feels like the type of move that a team that's desperate does.
Yeah.
You know, the Astros with Evan Gattis last year, or the Royals playing Kendrys Morales in the outfield. Are the Cubs at all likely to be desperate next season?
No, but he's going to be a defensive liability somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just have to decide where you want to have that defensive liability.
And like I said, like he looked like they absolutely wanted him in their lineup at all costs during the World Series. Mm-hmm. But I just don't understand how that's going to work with Contreras, with supposedly this Jay and Almora platoon going on, and with presumably Javier Baez at second base. I mean, he really seemed to solidify himself there, so that would force Zobrist to the outfield.
I don't just think you play
a lot of clutter.
Yeah, that's the thing. If he's 100% healthy, then it's going to be a little bit of a rotation. But if he's what we think he is, you don't play a lot of those guys you referenced and have Kyle Schwarber on the bench.
Probably not. But let's say,
like, he plays somewhere.
Like, I would assume he gets, if he doesn't have a true home, he would still get 450 at bats. Provided he's only outfield eligible. That's, you know, 450 at bat player is not someone I want to make a heavy investment in.
Okay. So to Heath's overdrafted players, Rick Porcello. Porcello went in the 5th round in our head-to-head points league, 9th round in Roto. And in our 10-team points league, he went in the 8th round. What do you think?
Which was about like the 6th, right?
10-team?
7th?
7th.
Early 7th, maybe?
Yeah, 7th. I don't know how Rick Porcello could scream regression anymore. And when we all agree he's going to regress, it's just how far is he going to regress? Career best in virtually every way. And I was saying at the beginning of last year, and so was Al, Rick Porcello is a great regression candidate. He wasn't near as bad. And Chris and I had this argument.
Yep.
And now Chris is taking him, because Chris basically said, listen, he's probably, since he's done it almost every year of his career, just a guy that is not going to perform up to his peripherals. Mm-hmm. And then he was better than his peripherals, and his peripherals improved.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe before the season starts, I will get an explanation for why he was able to post a career best 269 BABIP against, or a career best 74% strand rate without being a strikeout pitcher. And he was able, like, the wins. The one of the arguments I seem to hear is, well, he's playing for the Red Sox and they're going to be great, so he's still going to win a lot of games.
He played for really good Tigers teams for a long
time.
He's
played for a 90-win team almost every year of his career. Yeah.
No, I definitely reached for him in the 10-team league, for sure. I, looking at that one, you know, I would have rather had Danny Salazar. I probably would have rather had a couple of guys drafted behind him. I definitely reached for him.
I couldn't... The thing about Porcello to me is, yeah, I think he's going to regress, but you reach a point at starting pitcher where you just don't want anybody that badly, you know? And I'd rather have Rick Porcello And you know, I don't like Danny Salazar as much as you. He's right. He's among the group of pitchers I just don't want. So I'm happy to take a chance on Rick Porcello and trust he's going to get a ton of innings at least, but probably a lot of wins.
Why? Because he threw 220 last year.
Yeah, I don't think.
But in his career, he had 1 year out of seven where he went over 200. He was a 160, 170 guy.
But now he's done it, and I feel like normally when you cross that threshold, you're trusted to cross it again.
I feel like he threw 50 more innings than he'd ever thrown in the year before.
And here's the other thing that people keep selling Rick Porcello short on. He's always been a good control pitcher. Last year, he became an elite control pitcher, 1.3 walks per nine. And I feel like normally when you see a pitcher make that leap, they don't go back. At least not until very late in their career. So, elite control pitcher with an okay strikeout rate, what was a pretty good home run rate for last year's standards.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And so that's you know, two-thirds of the FIP equation, and he's not so terrible in the other. I think he's fine. I don't think he's going to win another Cy Young. I don't think he's going to win 22 games again.
I would say he's going to win 12 to 15. Maybe 12 to 16.
For me, it really comes down to there's just guys with more upside. Like, I'm looking at my rankings. I have him behind Danny Duffy. That seems dumb to me.
But I know I value innings a lot more than you guys do, too.
I think innings are so hard to predict.
Unless you've already achieved them.
Like, the argument before last year would have been he's got no chance to throw more than 180 innings. And then he threw 220.
See, right. But we're forgetting, like, he didn't throw that many innings in the past because he wasn't that good. You know, when you
pitch which
better,
is not an argument in his favor.
He was not that much better last year than he's ever been.
Well, he did cross his second best year was 2014, when his strikeout rate was much lower and his walk rate was a little bit higher. So, I mean, there was still a significant improvement peripherally from 2014. And he threw 204 innings. He won 15 games, had a sub 350 ERA. He was pretty good fantasy option.
I will also just note that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors with him, and maybe he can continue pulling off the smoke and the mirrors, but a lot of his success is built on called strikes.
And that's what we saw with Zach Greinke too.
It was sustainable last year, but that just...
Well,
look,
now you're throwing Zach Greinke in there. Like, Zach Greinke hasn't always been an ace, you know? He's always been an ace.
Yeah.
But two years ago, he had an unsustainably good year because he got a lot more called strikes than normal.
That's fair. And I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying Rick Porcello isn't going to regress. It's just, I see him as like a safer John Lackey.
True. Sure.
John Lackey's in my top 35 pitchers as well, you know?
Yeah. For me, it might just come down to a philosophy thing. Like, I prefer going for upside a pitcher because I wait. I don't like to draft the elite guys at the top, so I'd rather wait on the guys who have elite upside at the bottom. But, and I think that's just a...
But this year especially, you can get the best of both worlds with Arias and Manaea and Blake Snell. Those guys are all available round 12 to 16 range.
Yeah, but right around where Porcello's going to be drafted, you're going to have safe guys like Jose Quintana or Julio Teheran. But also...
Well, let me ask you, what's so different between Jose Quintana and... Rick Porcello, very similar strikeout rate.
Much better track record.
Quintana's done what Porcello did for like 4 years, except for the wins.
Okay.
Well,
he's never had a good year as Porcello.
To say that Porcello was not much better that last year than he had been in his career is not right. It's not true.
He lowered his walks. Scott made a very good point there.
I mean, this is you completely looking at a stat sheet, looking at his season by season log, and just taking that ERA column, taking a pair of scissors, vertical cut, horizontal cut, let's go down now, back horizontal, and just getting rid of the ERA column because it doesn't mean anything to you.
Who even said what you're saying? Nobody said Rick Porcello didn't have
Scott Adams defending you.
Well, I'm on your side here. Kind of. I mean, you can't say that Rick Porcello wasn't much better than he'd ever been before.
He was definitely much better last year.
His results were much better.
His process was much better. You're overstating. It's just the gap between his process and his results is overstated. He was a much better pitcher last season, but not as much as the drop from 4.92 ERA to 3.15 or from 4.20 career to 3.15.
Okay.
Seems to indicate. And when he regresses and he's a 3.6 ERA pitcher, let's say, and he wins 17 games, That's a good pitcher.
Still going to be very valuable.
That's a good pitcher.
I think he's be much more trustworthy than most of what we saw last year.
And sure, he's got a floor that's in the basement.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to help Scott White out anymore if he's just going to argue with me when I'm supporting him. Kind
of, I didn't Scott, understand where you were going.
You know, everyone says everyone says Scott's the nice guy in the office.
What?
Okay. Shut up, nice people. All right, Clayton Kershaw, Heath says, is overdrafted and first overall, 14th overall, and third overall in the three drafts so far.
This is going to be a much, much shorter discussion. Just based on philosophy that I think I'm the one that took him at 14th overall.
And oh, I think that's a great spot.
That was a little late.
Yeah, that's a great spot.
But I'm not taking a pitcher with one of my first three picks. No. I don't care if it's a points league.
Well, one of the first three picks, not one of your first three picks.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
One of the first three picks. And, like, there's a little bit of concern about Clayton Kershaw's health.
Last year was the perfect example of why taking any pitcher, even the best pitcher we've seen in at least 20 years and maybe longer, that might have been the best version of Clayton Kershaw we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he missed, awesome, you know, 12 starts as a result.
I don't know that that's a pitcher versus hitter thing anymore, though, because, I mean, Giancarlo Stanton missed a ton of the season, and then you look at the pitchers who were drafted after Kershaw. Scherzer was fine, Bumgarner was fine, Arrieta was fine health-wise. There weren't a lot of injuries among the elite starting pitchers. It just happened to be the very top
last
guy. But at the same time, I agree with the overall point. 1-3 for Kershaw, not knowing really how his back's going to hold up.
Back injuries are scary in sports.
Yes, absolutely. And just the fact that in any fantasy league, head-to-head or otherwise, I feel like these are people unfamiliar, not as familiar with the head-to-head format because it's not as popular of a format outside of CBS. Maybe adjusting a little too hard.
Okay. Let's go to the underdrafted. Oh, Chris is overdrafted.
Yeah,
sorry.
Come on.
Chris, I was going. All right, let's pick up the pace.
Heath and I are the nicest people on this podcast today. Huge upset.
Pick up the pace here. Chris, Garrett Cole going in the 8th round in all three drafts. You say that's too early for Garrett Cole.
I'm just not 100% sure Garrett Cole's that good. Like, am I totally off base here?
I think Scott kind of agrees with you.
Like, in the 2015 season, he was really, really good. But we have large segments of 4 seasons now. 3 of them, he's been just okay.
Yeah, but I think he went in the same round that you took Rick Porcello.
Sure.
You'd rather have Garrett
Cole. I already admitted I took.
Would you rather have Garrett Cole than Porcello?
Yes, okay. I already admitted I took Rick Porcello too early. So,
you think Cole should go in the 10th and Porcello in the 12th?
That sounds a little right to me. Yeah,
I mean, if you have Cole ahead of Porcello, there's no way you're the low guy on Cole. But 8th round, like the round number in and of itself doesn't strike me as odd.
Mm-hmm.
The order where he went among starting pitchers didn't strike me as odd either, actually.
And Scott doesn't really like Greg Cole very much.
It's just by the time you get to that 8th round range of starting pitcher, you're already having to guess what's up with any of these guys. And I think the question may be as loud as for Cole as it is for Snell or Arias or Matt Shoemaker or whoever.
Ooh, well, I like Cole a lot as a bounce back. Because what I had forgotten was that Cole, in his first 15 starts, had a 2.78 ERA.
Yeah.
Now, the strikeouts weren't there, and his last 6 starts, he had a 7.22 ERA, and then he got shut down with elbow inflammation. So I'd like to think that that had something to do with it. And I also think that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure he had a spring training injury, and I hate those for pitchers. It could screw up an entire season if you get off. If your training gets messed up, pitchers are creatures of habit. We saw it with Justin Verlander in the past. So I think injuries had a lot to do with Garrett Cole's performance. Even when he had the 2.78 ERA, the strikeouts weren't really there, and he wasn't pitching that deep into games. So it was a little bit frustrating. You know, I know a lot of fantasy owners, myself included as a Cole owner, were like, yeah, he's doing all right, but we wanted more. We expected more. We expected him to make a jump, and it just wasn't happening. And then he fell apart and got shut down with elbow inflammation. So I think if he has a healthy offseason, healthy spring training, I would not be surprised. He gets another mile per hour back on his fastball. He was a little bit down last year, and he has a good year.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. what separates him from Sonny Gray?
Gray is a good candidate too.
Strikeout pitcher.
Yeah,
strikeout.
I would think he strikes out more than Sonny Gray. No?
Was it every year?
Yes.
I mean, Garrett Cole has been a 7.5 per nine guy like Gray has for most of his career.
2014 and 15, he was higher. 2013, he was not.
But there's been a but I would say Gray has probably been more consistently high end than Cole has overall. And they both just kind of collapsed out of nowhere last year. And I think there are probably clearer.
He didn't collapse as bad. He didn't collapse near as bad.
Okay.
He had a 3.8 ERA, and his strikeouts collapsed down to where Gray's have always been.
He collapsed a little later.
Like I said, he had a 2.78 ERA going into the last month, his last
month. But he also had a 1.32 whip at that time. His strikeout rate was down. And, you know, Gray's strikeout rate being down is an argument in Cole's favor, except that Gray's better at home run prevention.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not to lose sight of the initial point with all the numbers within. Like, they were both considered to be top of the line pitchers going into last year, and they both severely disappointed for reasons we don't entirely understand but suspect are health related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. Like, I have. There's a big gap between the two in my own rankings. But. Like, to me, that's more a statement on the starting pitcher position in general than either of these pitchers specifically. Like, I have Garrett Cole 28th and Sonny Gray 51st. So, why? I don't know.
I think probably the difference is that, like, Cole collapsed to a 3.8 ERA, Gray collapsed to a 5.7. Like, you don't know for sure that you even want to draft Sonny Gray next year.
Well, but you weren't... Okay, but
it's two full points.
But they were both unstartable. When Garrett Cole came back, look at Garrett Cole's game log. There's no way you were starting him the last 3 months of the season.
No, that's not true. I looked at it this morning. It's the last like six starts, last seven starts. That's when he fell off a cliff. He was a frustrating start because he was going six innings.
I see a two-inning start in there, a four-inning start in there.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he's unstartable.
Two-inning start was scoreless. He got hurt that start.
What about all the good ones in there?
Okay.
I mean, I think the other thing is pedigree, no? I mean, Garrett Cole.
There's three quality starts. There's three quality starts the last four months of the season for Garrett Cole.
Pedigree doesn't matter 4 years into your career.
All right, but Garrett Cole was the number one overall pick in the draft, wasn't he?
Yeah. But so, we're 4 years into his major league career.
We're three years in.
And he's 26. Pedigree still matters. I think upside still matters up to age 30, actually.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. Chris, this guy, I mean, you're just picking on Dansby Swanson at this point. If he's going to go in the 19th round and the 18th round, and you think he's overdrafted. He also went in the 15th round in a roto draft, which is probably more relevant middle infield spot. Chris says Dansby Swanson overdrafted.
And this... There are echoes of an argument that Scott White and I had very recently about Francisco Lindor and Tim Anderson and Orlando Arcia.
It was so bad that I just went home.
Yeah, Heath just left. but for me, I look at Dansby Swanson, and based on the numbers that he's put up in the minors, I know the pedigree, I know the skill set is really impressive, but the numbers that he's actually put up, they're not that impressive from a fantasy perspective. Like the actual, like the home runs, the stolen bases, he's going to be a good contact hitter. He should hit for a decent average, but beyond that, it looks very empty to me. And I guess the difference is going to come into just believing in the ability to trump the track record.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was the first overall pick. Yeah. He's a top five prospect on everybody's list and gets comparison to Derek Jeter. That's mm-hmm. that's the guy he's most often compared to. And what I don't think the lack of success in the minor, very short time.
And it's not a lack of success.
And I don't think the lack of success isn't lost on me or anyone else who's drafted. He's getting drafted mm-hmm. around 19, 15, 18.
It's more the 15 one that I look at.
The 15 is too early.
If he had a great minor league track record, he would have been drafted in round six like Corey Seager was last year. So I think everybody's factoring that in. It's just you get to a point at shortstop where, I mean, it's still – the thinnest position around the infield, and you just have to you just have to throw a pick at upside if you want to get anything special.
Yeah,
I think that's exactly what's happening.
That's here. A fine place to swing for upside. It's in my opinion, it's fairly likely that there's five or six middle infielders taken after Swanson that are going to outperform him this year.
Let me read some. So he went in the 15th round in that league, and that's a middle infield league. That's the only of the three drafts. That's the only one where you have to start a middle infielder. I took Jose Reyes after, not really realizing that Reyes is slated to be a backup, assuming David Wright is healthy.
Oh yeah, if Reyes played every day, he'd be way ahead of Swanson.
Yeah. So then after that, Yoan Moncada. That was before the White Sox trade, though. Elvis Andrews. Let's see. Sliding down here.
See, the Moncada one's really interesting.
Orlando Arcia.
I would rather have Moncada, for sure.
But that was when he was still a Red Sox, so you can understand.
Sure.
Because you're swinging for upside. The difference, basically, is that Swanson had 30 good games in the majors last year.
Yeah.
There aren't
many. Well, there's more difference than that. I do think Moncada's ultimate ceiling. I mean, particularly in the counting stats. His home run peak is going to be higher than Swanson's. His stolen base peak is going to be higher than Swanson's. But he doesn't have a job.
Are we eliminating the possibility that Swanson sent back down at some point this year?
I think it's extremely.
He would have to be exceptionally bad.
To be honest, he was just based on his minor league numbers and being more optimistic because I value the pedigree more maybe than Chris does
and
in the first place.
For the Braves.
But even being more optimistic, he was much better those 30 games than I thought he was going
to. And a 383 BABIP helps. Like, I think.
Sure, but just in terms of the fact he hit three home runs, I mean, it was.
My thing with him is that I would guess he's probably not rosterable for most of the season.
In a middle infield league? In a league that requires an extra middle infielder?
There's a good chance he's Alcides Escobar with walks.
All right, here, let me give you two names. Because these guys went way after him this draft.
Maybe a little more power.
These guys went way after Dansby Swanson. Devin Travis and Starlin Castro.
Those guys are probably going to be better.
Yeah, I would guess so too, but neither of them is shortstop eligible. I think actually, and I don't have it open, but I think the league where he went 15th, I drafted him.
You
did. And it was to fill shortstop. It wasn't even to fill middle infield. It was to fill shortstop.
Well, some of the guys,
so position scarcity does come into play there.
Like, do we think he's going to be better than like Brandon Crawford next year?
No.
Brandon Crawford,
I think
I believe,
he has a good chance.
He has a higher ceiling, but I would say like a
Brandon
10%
Crawford
chance.
Was undrafted in that roto league, I believe.
Brandon Crawford has had one good year.
You took him ahead of Elvis Andrews, Scott.
Drubal Cabrera was undrafted in that league as well.
Probably going to be better.
You know I've never liked that Elvis Andrews, Adam. I mean, he's good for 20-something steals.
Yeah, Elvis Andrews at least does one thing good. Well,
he does it. He does it fairly well.
Dansby Swanson might hit 280 next year empty counting.
But he might steal 20 bases himself with more home runs.
Maybe. You said he might hit what?
280.
With three that times the home runs.
Is that an optimistic or a pessimistic?
I think that's a realistic.
Okay.
Like, I don't settle for mediocrity, particularly in the late rounds of the draft. It's just
he's
a mixed
probably
draft.
Going to be mediocre.
Yeah, that's my thing. I think the most likely outcome is
probably going to be mediocre. But Andrews is definitely going to be mediocre. Swing for the fences, man.
He's going to get you steals.
Well,
he's going to help you in a category for sure.
Yeah, there's something that
he'll
haven't mentioned yet
some
about
steals. But yeah. Kevin Pillar will give me steals, you know.
Well, you haven't mentioned this about Dansby Swanson. Like you say, he's. People compare him to Derek Jeter. Like he's actually, in my opinion, like considerably better looking than Derek Jeter. And I think like he's got the look of a star. He really does. So
okay, that helps. Thank you for that contribution, Adam.
Very welcome.
You're really helping. You're really bolstering my argument now.
Don't argue against me, Scott. I'm on your side.
How has every player become me versus Chris and Heath?
That's
actually,
not the
you,
case at all.
That feel like it.
You was Garrett Cole was you and. You and Chris against me.
That's true.
Did you really just ask how every player is you versus Chris?
It's a persecution complex.
It is a persecution complex.
Is this what it's like to work in the office with the three of you? Because you all sit right next to each other.
Yeah. No, it's really just Heath and I shouting at each other about stuff we wouldn't talk about on the podcast.
I try to stay out of it because I don't like arguing. I was a middle child. We're conflict resolvers, not, you know, instigators. So
I was a... I was a younger child, as nobody will be surprised to hear.
So was I. There's,
and I was the older.
Nobody has ever accused nobody has ever accused my sister, the middle child, of being the conflict resolver. That well, she would laugh at that. She was definitely the instigator.
It's a tendency thing, of course.
All right, we ran out of time to talk about the underdrafted, so we'll save that for another show. Let's read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Scott from Boise. Jose Peraza as a late-round keeper. Is his small sample size legit? If given the opportunity to start every day, do you think it makes it worth it to keep Peraza in a league late where each team keeps six guys?
Now that's a shortstop-eligible player who could be elite in steals.
Yes.
So assuming it's a categories league, yeah, I'd love to keep him with a late-round pick.
But we don't know that he has a job, right?
We don't.
He currently does not, but they're trying to create one for him.
Yeah, I think they want to move Zach Cozart. I'm sure they'd be open into moving Brandon Phillips. There's even been some talk about maybe Billy Hamilton being shopped. So.
And the fact that Peraza played, what, three different positions last year certainly helps his case
sure.
there.
Sure, it might be a Schwarber playing time issue. But if it's a counting stats league, I think he's so good in that one category, potentially. And look, he should be good at batting average, too.
12% strikeout rate last year.
Yeah.
He will not walk.
No.
Are
not
you
not, don't love him in points.
Joey Votto walks enough for everyone, man.
Are you drafting Peraza ahead of Dansby Swanson?
Yes.
I don't think so. But I could understand it.
I have him 70 spots higher.
70 spots higher.
At shortstop.
All right.
No love for the prospects.
Scott in Rochester. Can you rank these pitchers for next year, please? All right, get your rankings out. Let's just do top four. Alex Reyes, Blake Snell, Dylan Bundy, Jose De Leon, Julio Arias, Lucas Giolito, Tyler Glasnow. Again, Reyes. Hold on. Reyes, Snell, Bundy, De Leon, Arias, Giolito, Glasnow.
Well, I would rank them without having my rankings up, so I might contradict myself here. But I would go Arias, Reyes, Bundy, Snell, and then the three whose jobs are less than assured, Glasnow, Giolito, De Leon.
Is having Bundy just because he's a Sparp?
Bundy over Snell because he's a Sparp? Yeah, that factors in.
Like in Roto, you'd have Snell over Bundy.
I don't know, man. Snell
needs to improve and low lows.
A lot.
Bundy is the man. Dylan Bundy is going to be awesome this year. He is number one on this list for me.
I after furiously control effing on my Excel spreadsheet, I have the exact same order: Scott, Arias, Bundy, Reyes, Snell.
Okay, Reyes, you don't have the order.
Okay, no. Yeah, not the same order.
So you got Bundy second.
Yep.
Ooh.
I'm a big Dylan Bundy fan.
He's still figuring it out.
Bundy mania.
Heath?
Yeah, I think I'd put Bundy last. Not last of the seven, but last of the four.
Okay.
I agree with... I think the top four is pretty clear.
And it's the guys who have pitched well in the majors.
And the guys who have jobs. Yeah, I guess.
I think I'd put Snell ahead of Bundy, and I might put Snell ahead of Reyes.
I thought I was going to be the high man on Snell this year.
You underestimated Heath Snell love.
Yep.
Ooh, that's Snell.
Mike in Boston. Hey, Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and Vixen.
Try looking those guys up on Baseball Reference, by the way. It's wonderful.
Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and Vixen?
Yeah, there's like a whole like... I mean, if you look up Rudolph, you can link to each of their pages. I know on the Rudolph page, you know how it shows similar batters on Baseball Reference? It's like JT Snow, Matt Holliday. I think there's some player named Cupid who's on there. Like it's hilarious.
So wait, you're telling me that there's a page for Vixen?
Yep.
Yeah.
You say it's hilarious?
Yeah.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Had a very shiny nose, obviously, but also had a career 727 OPS.
What does the top line of his year-by-year breakdown say?
Not allowed to play in reindeer games.
Yeah.
Okay. 16-team auction roto keeper league. Over the last 2 to 3 seasons, we've had issues with teams trying to be the 76ers and start building for future years in April and May. This past year, we had one team trade 5 expiring contracts for 1 minor league player and $2 in draft bucks. Once the first trade is made, it becomes an arms race. Anyone at the top of the early stage buys up every expiring contract they can, and by June 15th, we have 5 teams competing and everyone else waiting for football drafts. Any suggestions on how to keep the whole league competing longer into the season? Don't suggest changing it to head-to-head. These guys are old-school roto fanatics. Our current options are impose a cash penalty for finishing 14th through 16th, and take those proceeds and bump up the 3rd and 4th place payouts.
I like that.
Create a Larry Bird hometown discount rule where any owner with an expiring contract that holds that contract from draft day through the end of the season will receive a 10% discount on next year's auction salary should they win that player back in the draft. Wow.
I like that.
That's crazy. Not crazy bad, just crazy intricate. And yeah, any number 3, any expiring contract that's also dealt will impose a $5 draft cap penalty for next season.
No, I don't like that.
I think the first choice is my favorite of them, the cash penalty for finishing 14th through 16th. You need to have some incentive to want to win still, even if you can't win the whole thing. And obviously, head-to-head handles that a little easier.
But I don't think it does. If you're trying to tank, then it doesn't matter.
No, speaking broadly, I have a rule in my head-to-head league that the way that the draft works the following year is the top non-playoff finisher gets the first pick, as opposed to just the worst team gets the first.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking was
I don't like that.
An escalating, an auction draft incentive for the teams that finish,
I'm okay with the 76ers.
Sure, but if I don't have any moral qualms about it, but if you are interested in making your league more competitive throughout, why not the team that finishes, in ninth place gets more money than the team that finishes in 16th?
What I have a hard time believing is these guys are paying their league entry fee and then giving up in April.
Well, they know they're going to play for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
That's kind of the, and I'm not against roto leagues. It's not my preferred format, but it still has obviously its perks. That's the biggest downfall, is that it's really obvious you're not going to win very early.
By April and May?
I would say by the end of May, yeah.
Yes.
There's probably still 6 teams in the hunt at the end of May. But
anytime you take out the randomness, I think that's an end result or a side effect of that. And Roto's really good because the best team's going to win.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's bad because if you don't have the best team, you're not going to win.
Yeah, 16-team Roto, then you know. If you got a bad team in a 16-team Roto league, you're not winning. Yeah, it's going to take a while. So, all right, let's go to our next one.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Just go to a head-to-head league.
No, that's it. That's Chris. That was all Chris. All right, next question is from Isaac. Dear Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Don't know him.
These are biblical names?
Yeah, no, it's actually the books of the Bible that would chronicle the birth of Jesus, because John does not. That's the other of the 4 Gospels. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the 3 that contain some version of the Christmas story.
Oh, yeah, I knew that. I just didn't want to embarrass you Christians with my knowledge. So, way to step up. All right, here's the question. 6x6, 14-team keeper league. We do saves and holds as one category and OPS as another. All other categories are standard. I can keep 8, and I'm trying to decide out of these 10 players. Keep 8. Goldschmidt. I'm seeing if I can narrow this down, get rid of the obvious.
Goldschmidt's a yes. Scherzer's a yes. So get those off.
Charlie Blackman's a yes. And all right, then let's just pick 5 of the next
7. It comes down to,
5 of 7. Here we go. Ready? Moncada, Kyle Seager, Gene Segura.
Nope.
David Dahl.
Really?
AJ Pollock, JD Martinez, Ian Desmond.
It comes down to 5 of 6, doesn't it?
It comes down to 5 out of 7.
What am I missing?
Yeah, you think Segura's in the mix?
I would say Moncada and Segura are the 2 that are out for me, for sure.
See, this is what I struggle with when I answer keeper questions, because, you know, like for this year, okay, fine. But if you give up the opportunity to keep Moncada now, and he blossoms into one of the best players in baseball.
If it's a dynasty, it's probably Moncada gets in and
Seager's out.
Yeah. Seager's out.
Maybe Desmond.
Maybe Pollock.
Maybe
Desmond was one I was thinking about. It's such a good list that I don't like throwing any of them back. But Desmond and Martinez, they're both pretty old, and I don't think either is going to age particularly well.
Whoa. JD Martinez
thin air
is
great
age
for aging.
It is. Obviously, Colorado's changed things pretty significantly for Desmond. But Gene Segura's so young, and he plays a premium position, and Moncada too. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning toward Desmond and Martinez actually here, but Moncada would probably be the next choice for me.
So we didn't help at all. We all gave different answers.
Well, what were your final answers? Heath, you're not keeping...
I would get rid of Seager and Segura.
Seager and Segura. And Chris?
If it's just a keeper league and we're only worried about next year, I would get rid of Segura and Moncada.
I would get rid of Martinez and Desmond.
So Segura is the only one for sure. He's the only one got two votes.
And I would get rid of...
Moncada kind of got a vote for
him. I was going to name two of you, but I'm not going to do that. I don't want to get rid of any of you. I want to keep you all. My little dynasty league over there. That's Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, Scott White. I'm Adam Azer. Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, even in the month of December. We're getting excited. Football's done in a couple weeks. It will be baseball season. We're going to rock and roll, ramp it up in January, February, all the way into the regular season. So have a great, safe holiday. We'll talk to you after the new year. See you later.
2017.